Khaki, I see you. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, I'm Molly Karam Rose. Hello, gentlemen. Hope you both had a wonderful weekend. And Stephen A., you teed it up, so I'm going to get right into it. The Nets losing a close one to a buzzer beater by Bam Adebayo of the Heat. But the bigger story, Kevin Durant. Guys, he's missed 33 of 57 games. He leaves in the first quarter with a thigh contusion. Coach Steve Nash says he will be reevaluated today. Stephen A., how worried are you about KD's durability? Because the big three have only played seven games together this season.
Well, I'm very worried because I don't think that the Brooklyn Nets come out of the East without KD on the court. That's just the bottom line for me. I think when healthy, he's arguably the best in the world, clearly top two as far as I'm concerned. He's that lethal. He's that much of a marksman. He's so efficient offensively. This is what he does, is what he brings to the table. But durability is a huge question mark where he is concerned. There is no way of getting around that. I saw the knees, Trevor Ariza's knee hit his thigh, so it's reasonable. It's not a calf or anything like that, but still in all, his durability is a question mark, and anything with the lower extremities, anything involving the lower extremities, gives me cause to pause when it comes to Kevin Durant because of what he's coming off of with the 18-month layoff due to the Achilles tear. So I look at it from that perspective, along with the plethora of games that he's missed this year, and I definitely think there is concern because, again, as great as James Harden is, as great as Kyrie Irving is, I do not believe for one second that the Brooklyn Nets are coming out of the Eastern Conference without KD on the floor.
Well, I think for a second they could come out of the Eastern Conference. I don't know if I'd pick them, but I think they'd be very live in the East even without KD. But I don't think – I mean, of course, you should be concerned. It's Kevin Durant. He's one of the great players in the game. And with a healthy KD and nothing standing in the Nets' way, they're going to obliterate everybody. So, yeah, there should be some concern, but let's not get carried away, Stephen A. First of all, you mentioned it. It's on his thigh. You know, if this was – so at worst, it's indirectly related to an Achilles kind of sort of, but not even, because it wasn't like it was a non-contact injury. There was contact. Now, if KD suffered a non-contact injury, and I heard it was his lower hamstring, it was his calf, it was anywhere in that vicinity of the Achilles and it was non-contact, I'd be like, uh-oh. But if you asked me to start the season, you know, hey, Nets fans, would you sign up for this? KD, because of some, getting back and some injuries and stuff, will only play around half the games by this time in the season. But he'll be playing on the level we've seen him playing. I think they would sign up. The main thing is the quality of his play does not, if it's diminished, it's hard to tell. Maybe on defense a little bit, even though he was accepting the toughest defensive assignment at the beginning of the season consistently, when they weren't playing good defense, but he was still taking on that assignment. No, offensively, he looks just about the same to me. He suffered a contact injury to a different part of his body. No, I'm not gonna be overly concerned. And Stephen A., let's just think how we were feeling about the Rockets when it was James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Now, we didn't like him, but we gave him a puncher's chance with Westbrook and Harden. But in terms of the playoffs, Kyrie has a better track record than Westbrook, frankly, because he shoots better. So you mean to tell me that that team had a puncher's chance, but this team, with a better supporting cast, Joe Harris and these guys, and Kyrie and not Westbrook, you mean to tell me, and Harden, by the way, playing on the highest level we've ever seen him play on, they don't have a good shot to get out of the East? I think they're just as live, just right in the class of the Sixers and the Bucks to get out of the East, even without KD. But with KD? Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course you like the Nets.
What I would ask is that if you're going to dance, why don't you at least wait until Tuesday or Wednesday? We're going to end the weekend and come on in the first segment. We're going to start dancing already. Well, I wouldn't pick them, but they're live. Really? That's what we're doing? I'm making a definitive statement. I'm saying that I don't believe they're coming out of the East. I didn't get into the can'ts or whatever the case may be. You could have an any given Sunday mentality when it comes to football.
Who's coming out of the East?
Hold on. I'm speaking now. Hold on. The point is that you can have an any given Sunday mentality when it comes to football. In basketball, obviously with James Harden and Kyrie on the floor, you want to say a puncher's chance or better than a puncher's chance. Sure, I'm not going that route. I'm making a statement that I don't believe they're coming out of the East. Now, that could mean, Max, they get to Game 7 of an Eastern Conference Finals and then lose. Does that mean they came out of the East? No, exactly. No, they did not. I'm making a definitive statement. I'm not getting into whether they're live or not. I understand with Kyrie and James Harden on the court, you could potentially beat anybody. I don't believe that they're coming out of the East against anybody, Philadelphia, Milwaukee specifically, without Kevin Durant on the floor. That's what I'm saying. I didn't bring up, are they live? I didn't bring up, they have a chance. I'm saying I don't have them coming out of the East without Kevin Durant on the court. I don't believe they will be representing the East in the NBA Finals. That's my position.
Number one, I probably would take the Sixers because what's your answer for Embiid? But it's not like in basketball in the beginning of every season, we have a very good feeling about who it's going to be. There are two or three teams because basketball is fundamentally determinative in the NBA. You play a best of seven, the team with the best players, they're going to, it's not like the tournament or the NFL or Major League Baseball where you get freaky kind of upsets the same way in the NBA. So what I'm saying is without KD, that's one of the teams you would identify still as a good shot to come out of the East as the Nets. But that's just one part, Stephen A. The other is we don't have to get crazy alarmed over this injury. As I said, it's not a non-contact injury, and it doesn't look like it's directly related to the Achilles. Like, that could happen to anybody, really. You get a little thigh contusion or whatever. You got to come out of the game. Now, KD's, 7 feet tall. He's a lanky dude. He's never been, brolic. He's not LeBron James. And so that's always been, you could always be concerned about that sort of thing with KD. But my point is I'm no more concerned about an injury like this now than I would be, 5 years ago with KD.
Fair enough. My position is that when he tore his Achilles, it wasn't the first time in his career he was injured and it compromised their postseason. And because he's tall and he's lanky and he's not as durable as, say, a LeBron James, that's a big, big issue. And I think that when you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, the way they defend and the way Joel Embiid has been playing and the shooters that they surround him with and the way Tobias Harris has been playing, along with Seth Curry and others. And then you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, who acquired Drew Holiday. You still got the Greek Freak. You still got Middleton. You picked up P.J. Tucker. Obviously, you still got Brooks Lopez. And you think about what they can do defensively and how they're still a major player in all of this. And they got two games coming up against Philadelphia on their home turf within the next week. We'll see what they do there. My point is, I think both are so formidable that the Brooklyn Nets absolutely would require the services of Kevin Durant in order to beat one of those two teams. And
well,
that's the way I'm looking at it. And so because of it, that's why the question about are you worried about Kevin Durant's durability is so profound to me. Because I believe he is the difference maker. He is the one who will decide whether the Brooklyn Nets go to the NBA Finals or not. Period.
Well, I'll put it this way. If you flip it around and look at it from, say, the Bucks' point of view, when they acquired Drew Holiday originally, I looked at the Nets and I thought, it's not enough. It's not enough. I'll agree about this. If the Nets don't have KD, it might be enough. Now the Bucks might get out of the East. If they got KD, they ain't getting out.
Hey Max, on a Monday morning, let me make you smile, brother. Let me make you smile. Did you see those Knicks? Did you see those Knicks, Max Ellerman? Six in a row. By the way, I want to officially declare that Julius Randle should be an MVP candidate. Woo. Julius Randle should be an MVP candidate, and Tom Thibodeau should be a Coach of the Year candidate. And last but not least, why did I bring that up with this particular segment? Are you ready for this, Max Kellerman?
I'm ready.
If the New York Knicks get to the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And the Brooklyn Nets fail to get to the finals, do you know that the Knicks will be perceived as having a more successful season? The Brooklyn Nets could get to the conference finals and lose. And the New York Knicks could get to the first round. And the New York Knicks will be deemed a team that had a better season because they exceeded expectations and the Nets fell short. Do you believe that?
You know something,
that's a beautiful thing.
You did make me smile.
It's a beautiful thing,
man. You know what I just realized,
man,
about you? I got to relate this to the Cowboys for a second.
Sure.
You know how sometimes it could be your kid or your younger sibling or something? The thing that makes you mad about them is the thing you don't like about yourself. When you see it in them, you're like, no, you got to correct this. Okay. I figured out your problem with Cowboys fans.
Okay.
You're a Knicks fan, that's exactly the same way. You are just like a Cowboys fan about the Knicks. These brothers are two games above 500. They got to win six in a row to get two games above 500. And you're standing here talking about.
They're four games above 500.
What's their record right now?
It's the 31-27. It's the first time they've been four games above 500 since 2014.
Four games above 500.
Since 2014. Yes.
Four games. I may have looked at that when they won four in a row. I might be getting my way.
It's the first time they gave four games above 500 since 2014. This is a beautiful thing.
Right,
it's a beautiful thing, Mac.
It's been 7 years.
I haven't said anything about the
game. You could work off an indentured servitude in the times it took for them to get four games above 500 again.
You don't have to bring up indentured servitude and all of that stuff. Here's the reality, Max. I haven't been bragging about the Knicks for years. This is the first time, unlike sick Cowboy fans who constantly walk around like they do something. I didn't do that about the Knicks. I've been very down on the Knicks until now.
I was hearing from you they were going to sign KD and Kyrie.
I had
to listen to that for a year.
That's right. I got sold that bill of goods until they hoodwinked me. It was a concerted effort to hoodwink me. But it's all right because they're going to pay for that. Let me tell you something. If you don't have KD, you ain't going to the finals. And if you don't go to the finals, the Knicks would actually be a better story in New York. And that's the team we'll be talking about in the offseason instead of the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay, Southern Steve. We'll have more time for that later. All right, the Big Three have missed a combined 60 games this season. Fellas, we are going to be discussing the Cowboys later, by the way, everybody. To Steph Curry, though, how about Steph, fellas, just dropping a cool 47 like it's nobody's business? Jason Tatum putting up 44, not so shabby himself, in a Celtics win. Curry went for 30 or more points for the 10th straight game, the first player age 33 or older to do this since Kobe Bean Bryant. Curry saying this season's required something a little bit different. I'm trying to meet that moment. It's a fun brand of basketball. Just trying to put wins together with it. Stephen A., is Steph the greatest offensive weapon in the NBA?
I believe he is. He doesn't have a post game, obviously. He is the greatest shooter God has ever created. Plain and simple. This year, without Klay Thompson, with him being the focal point because they don't really have anybody else to depend on offensively. I'm talking about to depend on. I'm not talking about a specific night Andrew Wiggins will drop a few points or Kelly Oubre or somebody. No. I'm talking about consistently. He is your offensive weapon. He is averaging 30 on 49% shooting from the field and 42.7% from three-point range, hitting 92.2% of his free throws. This dude is a sniper extraordinaire, the greatest sniper in the history of basketball. And when you consider that he can shoot from anywhere on the floor, left, right, or the top, you know, wing, you know, or the key, 20, 30, 40 feet away from the basket with regularity, there's nothing to talk about. When you consider what he brings to the table on that level and the efficiency with which he's doing it, and the fact that he's doing it this year without Klay Thompson, I just can't say enough that this dude, you can't foul him. You can't foul him. And when you go out there to contest his shots, you got to guard yourself from touching him or whatever because you know he's money from the free throw line. He is a marksman the likes of which we have never, ever, ever seen. And that is why I say he's the greatest offensive weapon. He got a handle. Kyrie Irving got a better handle. You see spot-up shooters that can shoot like that. Can't shoot off the dribble like him, no. You consider the multitude of weapons that he brings to his arsenal just to launch a shot. It's a shock when he misses threes, especially any open threes. This dude is just on another level, and that's why I say right now he's the greatest offensive weapon. Not the greatest player, but in terms of offensive weapon, because of his marksmanship, and how he frightens defenses, I'd say yes. Right now.
I respectfully disagree. I can't argue with those points. I think that's all true, and he is in the conversation. So I have to respectfully disagree with this one. I got three names for you, Stephen A. Mm-hmm. Number one, Kevin Durant. Played on the same team with Steph Curry. Let's leave the defense alone for a second. They really ran the offense through KD. He was the best offensive player on the team. He's also better defensively, and I realize it's because he's 7 feet tall and has a 7'6 wingspan. You go through all the stats when we talk about KD. But the fact is they were on the same team, and we could see with our own eyes, KD was offensively better than Steph. So I got to put KD ahead of Steph. The second guy is James Harden. Now, Harden cannot shoot it like Steph. And I'll agree with you that just because you say, oh, these two guys can both shoot, doesn't make them the same. Steph shoots better than anyone who ever lived, and that's worth a lot. And the ball doesn't stick with Steph, so you can have a nice fluid offense with Steph. Everything you said about him is true with his handles and everything. But Harden can do some things on offense. You mentioned post up, which Steph can't do because he's too light, you know. Harden can do some things that Steph can't do. And Harden has shown this season that he conducts an offense better than anyone except maybe, I'm saying maybe, LeBron. That includes Steph and Luka and everyone, what we saw from Harden now. And offense is not just about scoring or shooting. It's about the overall offense of the team. So that makes Harden, who can also shoot it from outside, step back and take 10, 11 a game and hit a whole bunch. Not as much as Steph, but that's just one part of his game. You look at Harden like that, even him missing games now, it's not like Harden. Harden's been more durable than Steph. But when he's on the floor as an offensive weapon this year, I have to give him the edge. And then finally, there's Damian Lillard. Stephen A., everything Damian Lillard does on offense that makes you go, wow, Steph does a little bit better. I'll give you that. And Steph also showed Damian Lillard the way. Steph is the trailblazer, and Lillard is derivative of him, meaning Steph had the big imagination. I could shoot from way back there. Steph's one of the most influential players who ever lived. So I'm not saying Lillard copied him and did even better than Steph. He's kind of playing Kobe to Steph's Jordan in that way. However, Lillard is the most clutch player in the game, Stephen A. And the higher leverage moments when you're playing offense, that means something to me. I saw Steph, and he played well against her. He won a game against Kawhi in Toronto when they were shorthanded. That was amazing, Steph. But I've also seen him in a Game 7, fate of the universe on the line, greatest record of all time, greatest half-court offense of all time. He's conducting the offense at home, fourth quarter, Game 7. They didn't score a single point in the last 4 minutes and 22 seconds. I don't forget that. So comparing him to Lillard, I maybe give Lillard the edge because when it matters most, I trust him a little more. Those are three names. Steph's in the conversation, but I can't put him above those three guys.
You're wrong on all three. Number one, I love Lillard, and Lillard would be second to Steph Curry. He's a career, like, 37% shooter from three-point range, a career 43% shooter. And even though we've seen Lillard come on as of late and we've seen him hit many clutch shots in his career, there's also times where he's been swept in the playoffs by New Orleans with Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, and others, where we ask questions about where were they or whatever. You know, Lillard's a top two candidate for league MVP right now. I hope he wins it. He's a great brother, a great player, you know, and I'm rooting for him. But make no mistake, he's not Steph Curry when it comes to that. Not to mention the fact that as great as Lillard is, he doesn't move without the ball the way that Steph Curry does. And that obviously compromises defense because they got to have their head on a swivel because you're looking for where Steph Curry is. You always seem to know where Damian Lillard is. He just makes those shots. So there's something to be said about the ability to make others better by what you do in terms of your movement and how you distract defenses so it can open up opportunities for other people. That's why I wouldn't give Lillard the edge there. When you talk about James Harden, he shoots 44% from the field for his career, 36% from three-point range. We know that he holds the ball, even though he hasn't done that this year, and has shown an ability to really be selfless and really make liars out of a whole bunch of people who were labeling him as such. The bottom line is, again, the impact that he has on an opposing defense isn't the same because even though you can't stop him, although he's capable of making other people better, the career has shown through the 8 years or so in Houston that even though there are times when he did that, the bottom line is he was ball dominant and he did what he did. When you look at what Steph Curry has been doing consistently, not only is he your point guard, but you run the offense through him, not just for him to run plays for other people, but because of his movement, again, you do it for him as well. And this is what he causes, the havoc that he wreaks on defenses because of his movement without the basketball and his marksmanship. And then, of course, there's Kevin Durant. We all know that Kevin Durant was the best player on the Golden State Warriors. We all know he's a better player than Steph Curry right now when healthy. We get all of that. But when you talk about the greatest offensive weapon, what's the one knock that you can place against Kevin Durant? It's a lack of aggression. Steph Curry is shooting over 20 shots a game right now. Kevin Durant has shot over 20 shots a game twice in his career. The lack of aggression, the lack of assertiveness, clearly he wants to do things the right way, and that's a priority. But because he has been somebody that was willing to defer on far too many occasions and was devoid of that level of aggression per se, That's one of the reasons that we questioned whether or not he was number one or even above LeBron or whatever, because there were too many moments and too many times when Kevin Durant didn't call for the ball like he did that time with Draymond Green against the Clippers when they got into it on the sideline thereafter. We didn't see Kevin Durant on a lot of occasions calling for the ball and demanding it when time allowed or when moments allowed. So those are the kind of things that get counted against you as well. I still say Steph Curry in terms of all the ingredients that come with it. He's number one.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys or tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Tom Brady said Sunday that his knee is recovering well from offseason surgery, and he's hopeful he'll be able to resume his typical training and participate in mandatory June minicamp. If there is one, saying, I feel pretty good. I don't know if I could go this week, but we'll see how things play out. And you can't talk Tom Brady without mentioning Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, who both lost to Brady in the playoffs this season. Max, is Tom Brady putting more pressure on Mahomes or Rodgers?
The answer is Patrick Mahomes. Tom Brady's actually putting more pressure on Patrick Mahomes, which is a counterintuitive conclusion, I agree. Because it feels like they're both running out of, that Aaron Rodgers is running out of time and Patrick Mahomes got plenty of time. But not against Tom Brady, you don't have plenty of time. How many years is Tom Brady going to play? Patrick Mahomes, in his entire career, has two playoff losses. Otherwise, in my opinion, he would be a three-time Super Bowl winner. Do you understand? If Mahomes, given the level he's played at, was already a three, can say he three-peated as a Super Bowl champion, I think he'd probably already be known as the GOAT, right? Because you'd have to take a couple away from Brady. And also, Brady's never really reached the level of, oh, my God, did you see that, that Mahomes is on. So Brady's already kind of gotten in the way. But here's the problem for Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes really should still be alive for GOAT status eventually, given how early he was that great on that great a team with a coach and players around him and everything. He's like Aaron Rodgers if Aaron Rodgers would have been on loaded teams every year. But as we all know, that winds up redounding to the benefit to the reputation of the player on the great team, as it did with Tom Brady for years. And so Mahomes, if he wants to keep that alive, guys, he can't get knocked out by Tom Brady again. Could you imagine? Like, this dude loses three times in the playoffs or is otherwise blocked from a Super Bowl three times by Tom Brady when Mahomes was in his 20s and Brady was in his 40s? Since Brady is the GOAT and that's the guy against whom Mahomes will be compared for that status one day if things go well for Mahomes, it's already over if he loses to Brady again or even if they compete in the same league and Brady wins a Super Bowl and Mahomes gets knocked out. No, Mahomes this season, it is imperative, if that's important to him, to be known as the greatest ever, or if it's important to fans, you know, who's the greatest ever, that he succeeds more than Brady in the playoffs. In fact, he's running out of time Mahomes, because of Brady's age, as much as Rodgers is with Tom Brady. The answer is Patrick Mahomes.
I disagree with you. I get where you're coming from, but I disagree. Here's where I'm coming from with this, Max. What if Patrick Mahomes has, like, he's on this revenge tour and he is just wreaking havoc and wrecking shop and looking like Patrick Mahomes is capable of looking when he doesn't have a foot or a toe injury and an offensive line actually protects him? Just think about that for a second. If he does all of that and passes 5,000 yards and does the kind of things he's capable of doing, but Tom Brady gets bounced out, we'll still be talking about Patrick Mahomes for years to come. But in the NFC, if Tom Brady wins, not only does he wins at the expense of Aaron Rodgers. And when you combine what Green Bay is doing with Aaron Rodgers, I mean, what are we talking about here? Aaron Rodgers, think about this for a second, guys. We're talking about a guy, Patrick Mahomes, is getting about $45 million. And you know, Deshaun Watson's at about 38, 39. Russell Wilson's at about 35. Ben Roethlisberger's right about it. You know, 34, whatever, at least he was before he agreed to take less this offseason, the next season. Aaron Rodgers is scheduled to make about $14.7 million in base salary, about $6.8 million with the bonus. That comes up to about $21 million. And then you look at, you know, the workout bonuses and all of this other nonsense, it didn't, even though it's a $37 million cap hit. The reality is that he's underpaid. We all know this. We all know that the Green Bay Packers have given every indication we want to move in a different direction, despite how great he is. The man just, well, he knew that coming into last season, completes 70% of his passes, throws for 48 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions, 4,200 plus yards passing, and wins league MVP. And they still not only just had the roster bonus for him, but you got agents leaking out stories or executives leaking out stories about how Aaron Rodgers is compromising the Green Bay Packers because, my goodness, I mean, they're so cap-strapped because of him. Really? This is the kind of nonsense that this guy has to deal with, okay? Which is why he should be leaving for Jeopardy or definitely, at the very least, moonlighting the host of Daggone Show and bringing that additional income that he deserves from an NFL team who clearly doesn't have it or is unwilling to give it to him. So I look at it from that perspective, and I think about all of that backdrop with Green Bay going on. And then you combine that with Tom Brady still getting healthy, still hell-bent on returning and trying to go for another Super Bowl, blah, 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 blah. I'm looking at all of that, and I'm saying Aaron Rodgers is where the pressure lies. There's more pressure on him than it is on Mahomes because he is running out of time, specifically in Green Bay. And he's in the same conference as Tom Brady. That, to me, puts more pressure on Aaron Rodgers than it does on Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I mean, look, I think this is where our debate lies. I think that it's very, very unlikely that Rodgers will be in the GOAT discussion eventually. Guys like you and me, years from now, old heads would be like, oh, Rodgers in his prime. But if he winds up with one or even two Super Bowl championships, given the number that Brady has, given the number that Montana has, right? Given the fact that there are other players, even if Aaron Rodgers was the first one, now we have Mahomes, there'll be another guy where you're like, oh my God, look at that physical package. Like the fact they can run and throw and do off platform and all that stuff, because increasingly we see that kind of quarterback now. Rodgers is like, the idea that he's ever going to be called the greatest of all time is far-fetched, especially since he just competed against Brady in the conference. And when it came time for the championship game, some bad decision-making on his and his coach's part, you know, ended any chance they had to beat Tom Brady and his team. And I know he was down an offensive lineman, and that's legit and everything. I'm talking about really what's going to happen likely when we go to evaluate their careers. But Mahomes, Stephen A., he himself is still so young, and he's gotten off to such a fast start. He's basically
Which is averaging. Why the pressure's not there.
But that's right, because he has a shot to be considered GOAT, but not if he doesn't get past Tom Brady. Because Brady's already gotten him twice.
Let me throw this out at you and Molly, because no one's ever thought, I've never heard anybody mention this, but I will. There's only one way, and we all know that Tom Brady is the man. He's the GOAT. I mean, the resume speaks for itself. There's no debating that. And we won't bring up the cliff or ravine because we want to be nice to Max this morning. But I will tell you this. If there is one way that Tom Brady could be compromised in terms of conversations about him, And it'll never happen. Let me be very, very clear. This will never happen. But think about this. What if Aaron Rodgers ended up a New England Patriot and went over to New England with Bill Belichick and won the Super Bowl? That's about the only thing that Aaron Rodgers could do to elevate himself. While, and the reason I say is this, because if he were to ever do it, again, we know it's not going to happen because he's not going to New England, okay? But if he were to ever do something like that, what would happen is, while simultaneously winning and elevating himself and obviously being in the same conference as Patrick Mahomes and taking him out, what it would also do is prompt us to ask questions yet again about Bill Belichick or Tom Brady all of those years together in New England, okay? Those questions alone would make things very, very compelling.
He'd have to win at least two of them, Stephen A. My point is this. Because of Belichick.
Okay. If Aaron Rodgers went to New England and won one Super Bowl with Belichick, it would throw some doubt on stuff.
Yeah, I want to respond to that real quick, Molly. I get it. It's a good thought. But because Brady already did it without Belichick, year one, getting just one with Belichick wouldn't be enough for Rodgers to be in that conversation. He'd need multiple.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it would be enough for him to be in a conversation. I'm saying it would be an excuse for people who want to throw a little shade on Brady to do so. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Jake Paul made good on his word and stopped the former MMA world champion Ben Askren in under a minute on Saturday, but Paul still hasn't fought a professional. But the YouTube star now owns a knockout victory over a professional fighter in Askren. Stephen A. tweeting this. See, this has to stop. Jake Paul is not some scrub. He's a pro now. Askren, even though he's a UFC fighter, is a grappler, not a boxer. So why was he even in the damn ring? From now on, Paul needs to fight an actual boxer. He's going to hurt any non-boxer. Stephen A., were you impressed with Jake Paul's KO of Askren?
No, I was not. But it has nothing to do with Jake Paul. I want to emphasize that. The guy, I think, is fundamentally sound thus far, Max. I have not seen him against a real boxer. But I think we've seen enough from him to know he takes it seriously enough. He's got about 14.8 million followers on Instagram, and he's got a few million on Twitter. So he's a social media sensation, you know, YouTube, that kind of stuff. We get all of that, and his popularity is his popularity, and give him credit for that, okay? You know, but Nate Robinson was a basketball player. This guy, Ben Askren, 19-2 as a UFC fighter, if I remember correctly. We know what Masvidal did to him, but Masvidal with that kick to the head, that knee to the head, would have knocked anybody out, catching them by surprise like that. Where I'm not impressed, Max, is that Ben Askren should be ashamed of himself. He walked in there looking like a fat slob. I'm serious. He looked like somebody's grandparent. I mean, it was pathetic. It really, really was. You know, to know that he is a professional fighter. See, I don't hold that against heavyweights. Like, if you're a heavyweight in boxing or a heavyweight in the UFC and stuff like that, I get all of that, okay? But there is no excuse. There was no excuse for Ben Askren to walk into the ring looking like that. And, Max, you'll laugh at this. And put me on a split screen because I want to see, Max, when I'm saying this. If you watched it, and I know you did, Max, and you saw Ben Askren, did you see how he was holding up his hands? It was like a fighter from the 1940s. I didn't know whether I was watching him or Jake LaMotta or Joe Louis or someone. I'm like, what the hell is this? This is unbelievable. I couldn't believe how he looked. And clearly, as a UFC fighter, he was a grappler. He was never known as a striker, okay? That's not his thing. And so I'm looking at Jake Paul, and I'm saying, listen, respect the cat's skills. This guy apparently wants to be a boxer. They say he's been training for 2 or 3 years. He's been taking it very seriously. Okay, that's fine. And I got nothing but respect for him, and I wish him nothing but the best. I can't wait to talk to him one day. But here's the reality of the situation. You're going into the ring against non-boxers. At some point in time, you got to go in there against somebody who at least has an amateur record. I mean, somebody that is trying to be a pro. Because guess what? If you out there trying to be a boxer and your hands are licensed, guess what, Max? You could actually get yourself arrested for doing the kind of stuff that he's done to Ben Askren and Nate Robinson. More so Nate Robinson than Ben Askren, because Nate Robinson is a basketball player that should have never been in the ring. As Snoop Dogg would say, you don't play boxing. And in Ben Askren's case, even though he's no boxer, he was a UFC fighter, still is a UFC fighter, so I get it. But clearly, boxing is not his thing. It was very, very evident. And Jake Paul going into the ring against non-boxers, that has to stop. Now we need to see him against guys that actually fight, like box, is what I'm saying, since you got to go by boxing rules.
I was impressed by the knockout because it was a one-hitter quitter. Middle of the ring, two dudes, hands up. One guy jumps in with the right hand, cold clocks the other guy, flies his head, and stops him. I mean, you know, Askren got up, but he was done. One shot. I'm impressed. Now, Askren's not a boxer, but he's scored knockouts in MMA fights with his hands. He is an experienced fighter. And Jake Paul is a novice. So I would not recommend that he fights guys with a deep amateur record, because that kind of muscle memory, even if you're a fantastic athlete and you take it very seriously, when you start exchanging with someone who has muscle memory from the time they're a kid, it's not going to go well for you usually. It's not going to go good. Jake Paul is not responsible for the shape the other dude comes in. He no amateur fights. As a professional, he does this celebrity boxing stuff, but he takes it seriously. Yeah. All you can ask is that from Jake Paul is that he takes it seriously, he's dedicated to the craft, he shows up in shape, and he gives it his best. He's not responsible for Nate Robinson not really taking it as seriously as he is, or Askren not showing up in shape. That's not his business. His business is to take care of himself. Now, the next time he fights someone, should it be someone with a deeper background? Honestly, Stephen A., not if he can get money for fighting fights like this. Why would, if you're getting paid millions to put on a show and you have to find the right kind of name opponent to put it on with, then depending on your aspirations, who says you ever have to fight more than that if the public will still pay for it?
Max, excuse me for interjecting. Seriously, excuse me for interjecting, but I have to address you on that point. I can't hear that from you guys, because you guys, like I will defer to your boxing expertise as much as you've been covering boxing. And I don't mean to come across like I'm being negative about Jake Paul in any way. I truly am not. I'm not knocking him for it. I'm just saying people who put these fights together, the guy's taking it seriously, man. To throw him in the ring against people that don't box is not right, okay? That is not even about him stealing money. You could really, really hurt somebody. Listen, we ain't seen Nate Robinson since. And you notice we ain't laugh about that. We have not seen Nate Robinson since. I was told that Nate Robinson had to be carried out of the ring. There's some serious damage that happened to Nate Robinson, okay? I'm just saying, this guy is not a joke. So people that get into the ring with him need to know how to box. But to you, the reason why I stopped you is because we've lamented for years that Floyd Money Mayweather would wait forever to fight the Pacquiao's or didn't fight this guy or didn't fight that guy because he was being smart about making his money. And when you going to fight this guy? Why didn't you fight that guy?
Well, hold on.
We did that to him, and this guy was a world champion and is considered universally one of the greatest ever.
Right. But the difference is we knew Floyd was one of the greatest.
Yeah.
And what boxing people are saying is, yes, you can navigate yourself your way to an undefeated record. And by the way, Floyd's resume is underrated. He fought a lot. He has a great resume.
Absolutely.
He has a great resume. But there were times where there were fights we wanted to see him take that he didn't take, right? Because in the media, it's not that we're interested in seeing a guy get beat, but we want to take to create fights where when we imagine it, we don't know who's going to win. And Floyd was so excellent that when that opponent popped up, we're like, no, fight that guy now because you're going to be compared to Sugar Ray Robinson and Ali and all those guys, and those guys all did that. So it's a different standard. If Jake Paul wants to be considered a great fighter or a good one on a professional level, then he has to do exactly what you said. I wouldn't do it yet. I mean, maybe they should find another celebrity type
ring,
of
Max,
another celebrity type
pro,
of opponent.
But get in the ring with somebody that at least boxes, tries to box.
Or someone who will take it more seriously. Someone who will train harder. But he can't control that.
Yep.
He doesn't know Asker's not going to train. How can he control that?
Let me get this in here before we go to break. On a more serious note, Jake Paul releasing a statement last Tuesday denying a sexual assault allegation by TikTok personality Justine Paradise. She made her allegation in a YouTube video posted on April 9th saying that he forced her to perform oral sex. That was back in July of 2019. As of now, we're not aware of any criminal complaint to law enforcement involving Paradise's allegation.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.